Welcome in to a Wednesday edition of the Daily Tap. It is April 25th. How are we doing, tappers? It is a depressing, but it is a rough Wednesday for all the Bucks fans out there. It was a tough game five, rock fight in Boston. We will talk about that. We'll also talk about the Brewers winning and any NFL draft rumblings that are happening at this juncture. So it is a good time that you're following SnowTapWI, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, do it all. Also, SnowTapWI, it is a website. Subscribe on iTunes, subscribe on Google Play. Like I said, the listens have been great recently. Thank you to all of those that are listening. We are coming close to 10,000 listens, very close, and that is a very exciting time. We could have a Tapping the Keg tonight. We'll see. Mitch has a little bit of car trouble, and unfortunately, I can't help out. I'm going to be doing some errands prior to the podcast. And that being said, so we'll see if we can actually make it happen. If it doesn't happen, we'll do another Daily Tap. We'll get Murph on the blog. He'll have his annual draft post. And then Murph will do the Daily Tap on Sunday. So we will have some Murph exposure. He is kind of our draft guru. He is our Mel Kiper or Todd McShay, whatever you prefer, whatever he prefers, really. So we'll have him. But yes, there is a possibility that we do not get a Tapping the Keg in. We'll see. I'm hopeful that it will happen, but we'll obviously update the masses when we know. So let's talk a little bit about Game 5. Game 5 was a very interesting one. I will not say it was an exciting one. Easily the most boring Bucks game of the five. It definitely was played at Boston speed. The Bucks went down early, as it seems to be the theme in this series, that one team goes down early in the first half. The other team then battles back and makes it a game for the fourth quarter. And, you know, Gus Johnson and Marcus Johnson, who were the call for FS Wisconsin, kept saying, the Bucks have a run in them. The Bucks have a run in them. And they were right. It felt like the Bucks were so close, and they were missing it by just a little step, and they could not finish the deal. They got to about four, then the Celtics would hit a big shot, and kudos to them. But it was just like, it was so frustrating because they were really close, and it just didn't happen. Giannis only had 10 shot attempts. It's going to be a big story today about, did Giannis defer too much? Did Giannis not do enough with the ball? How did he only get 10 shots up? I think that what happened there was Joe Prunty couldn't adjust to what Brad Stevens put in front of him. Brad Stevens put in Semi Ojeleye. Semi Ojeleye, I think, will get the tag from probably the Boston media. Oh, he's a Giannis stopper. And, you know, I thought Dan Schaefer, a former Milwaukee Business Journal writer, had a great point prior to the game. Like, this needs to be a Giannis game. Like, some of these guys who showed up in the home playoff games are not going to show up on the road. He needs to come through with a big game. And I think Giannis just didn't do enough to create for himself. And Giannis decided to be more of a facilitator and find the open guys because Boston was crashing in on him and they were trying to figure it out. So Giannis is obviously going to have to adjust to this. This is obviously how Boston's going to play him in Game 6. And if there's a Game 7, they're going to play him this exact same way. So Giannis will have to make these adjustments. He can't just shoot the ball 10 times. I get that he nearly had a triple-double. He nearly had 10 assists. But at the same time, he has to be a scorer. He cannot score only 13 points for the Bucks. I think we finally saw a decent second half from Eric Bledsoe. I don't know if the Terry Rozier near scuffle inspired him, but he finally looked like the Eric Bledsoe I think we've seen all season. Eric Bledsoe had some nice moments. I think he wasn't perfect, but he definitely added an element to the Bucks scoring and helped them in that second half propel there. I mean, Shabazz Muhammad did too. I don't know why Shabazz Muhammad was in the game in the fourth quarter. That made no fucking sense. I mean, Joe Prunty seems to do one thing that makes absolutely no sense. That's just an asinine move by Prunty. I mean, last game it was keeping Dellavedova on ice in the fourth quarter, even though he was clearly the better option against Bledsoe. Then we had Shabazz go in for Malcolm Brogdon. Malcolm Brogdon just hung out on the bench. Malcolm Brogdon's your fucking rookie of the year. Malcolm Brogdon, even though he did not have a great game, the guy just has that affinity for clutch shots. He has clutch shots coming out of his ass. Like, you should let Malcolm Brogdon be in this game, not Shabazz fucking Muhammad. I appreciate what Shabazz did. Shabazz is not a fourth quarter closer of a 2-2 ball game. He's just, that's just not him. I mean, I get it. He's like a Lance. He's like a J.R. Smith. But at the same time, an irrational confidence guy, when he's not like a three-point assassin, doesn't make a lot of sense in that situation. So I thought Prunty tried way too hard there. Chris Middleton, you know, wasn't as good as he's been, but he still had some big buckets, and he still got a lot of shots in. So it's hard to be upset at what Middleton did. Middleton definitely saw the Giannis struggles and knew he had to be more of a scorer today, and he definitely did that. So, and Marcus Smart's defense didn't entirely affect him. Marcus Smart obviously added some energy to the Celtics team. They were definitely inspired. The crowd loves him. I mean, he is a fan favorite for sure. But I do think that that offense does not look the same with Marcus Smart. I mean, Jason Tatum was cold. Jaylen Brown had some big threes late in the game, but he didn't really have that great of a game. Marcus Smart forced a couple shots down the stretch that weren't, that you're like, okay, take these, Marcus Smart. And I mean, that's the one thing I think the knock on Smart is the fact that he definitely does not have the sort of, he's just sort of a trick or treat guy on offense. He obviously is a great defender, but he definitely can affect how the rhythm and flow goes of the Boston offense. So Smart jacking up shots is okay with me, and I know that it didn't pay off for the Bucks in this one, but it's going to pay off maybe in Game 6. Who knows? Maybe even in Game 7. So I think the Smart thing is definitely an inspiration for this game. We'll see if that just carries over for Game 6 or Game 7. I don't know. I think that's sort of a one-game sort of thing. I don't necessarily see that being a multi-game thing. It's not like Smart is the Lord and Savior and he's adding 20 to 30 points a game. That's just not really happening. So to talk about the officiating, I saved the officiating for the last thing. I saved that as like, okay, let's talk about the officiating. Let's not lead with that. Let's lead with some of the things the Bucks did right, some of the things the Bucks did wrong. So let's talk about the officiating. So the officiating was decent. It wasn't that great for the game, most of the game. But it wasn't like causing panic or causing anger in any shape of the word. Then you had what happened with the shot clock violation under 2 minutes. Al Horford clearly had the ball in his hand after the shot clock went off. No horn, no nothing. Home cooking to the T. There were 75 seconds left to go in the game. They didn't call it. Then Marcus Smart missed the three with 50 seconds left. So Boston got a complete reload instead of giving the Bucks the ball back when the Bucks could have had a chance to bring it to 3 or bring it to 2 and have maybe a minute left, maybe same time, 50 seconds. It's absolutely a joke. It is absolutely a fucking joke by the league. The league has screwed the Bucks pretty much this entire playoffs. I'm not going to blame the officials, but they've made it hard on Milwaukee. Even though Giannis is a fucking star, they want Boston to be playing Philadelphia in the second round. That is what is desired. They desire a Boston-Philly divisional round. Forget the fact that Milwaukee and Philly could be just as good of a series, could have just as good of storylines. They would rather have it be the two teams from the big Northeast, two blue bloods of NBA basketball. And it's just frustrating. And it's not that I want to be this whiny Midwesterner type, because I feel like we in the Midwest always complain about officials and we always act like officials are out to get us. And like, but it's hard not to like be upset. It's hard not to be frustrated with this shit, because every game something seems to fucking come up where it's like, wow, the officials were terrible. on game three, it was like the officiating was so bad in the first quarter, it felt like they were trying to keep the Celtics in the game. The second game, the game four, the officials were so bad down the stretch. Yes, they missed the call on the Bucks with Chris Middleton fouling Jaylen Brown with 40 seconds left. But regardless of the fact of that, they were mostly bad for Milwaukee. So I don't know how much longer we can deal with this charade. I'm glad Eric Bledsoe called it bullshit. I wanted someone to at least acknowledge the fact that this is garbage. And hopefully the officials are better, but I'm not expecting anything. I definitely think it's something the Bucks are going to have to deal with in Game 6. There's no question about it. So moving on to the Milwaukee Brewers. The Milwaukee Brewers got their 7th straight victory, thanks in large part to the big bats of Travis Shaw and Lorenzo Cain. Travis Shaw hit a 3-run homer. Lorenzo Cain welcomed himself back to Kansas City with a home run and 2 walks. So very, very good stuff from Low Cain and the Brewers getting the job done. It was definitely worth excited to see. Definitely a very good win for the Brewers. Zach Davies pitched decent. He didn't have anything too exciting. I mean, he only had 2 strikeouts. He was efficient. I guess that's the best way to describe it. It's what you want from your starting pitching. The Brewers have sort of put more of their focuses on their bullpen, and their bullpen did well. Matt Albers pitched pretty well. Dan Jennings, again, very good. Jeremy Jeffries closed out the game for Milwaukee. So a very good win for the Brewers. Very kind of prototypical, getting the job done, especially when the Cubs and I believe the Cardinals won. The Cardinals were up 6-5 last time before I mistakenly fell asleep last night. Very old man of me, I know. So let's see. I believe the Cardinals won. Let's check. Oh, the Mets came back in the 10th inning to beat the St. Louis Cardinals 6-5. So the Cardinals lost. So Brewers will be sitting on top in first place as the game starts on Wednesday. Brewers go for the sweep tonight. They will be probably without Eric Thames. Eric Thames suffered a thumb injury. Not great. Similar to Orlando Arcia, where he jammed it. Now, they didn't come out and say, hey, x-rays were negative. So it looks like maybe Thames goes on the DL. I wrote about it this morning. SnowTap WI, it's a website. Probably means a J-Man Cho appearance, or maybe they go with another infielder because of the Arcia injury, and that Cho might come up if like Arcia is officially down. Who knows what the Brewers decide to do. I think that this is a bit, obviously a terrible situation for the Brewers if Thames is out for a long time. Thumb injuries are tricky. We saw it with Ryan Braun, obviously. Affects your power. It affects your contact. It's definitely something that I don't think the Brewers want to rush Eric Thames back for. Hopefully it's not a 4-6. Hopefully it's just a 2-4 week injury. Hopefully it's not something that is going to be a long-term injury. I think the concerning thing is that there was no thing about there was an MRI and it was negative. There was none of that yesterday. So hopefully it's not something that's long-term. It's going to keep him out for a majority of the season. I would say if there was one position where the Brewers could deal with a long-term injury, it's probably first base, because you have Jesus Aguilar, you have J-Man Choi, you have some guys who can really do well in that first base position. I've always said this about Aguilar, and I said last year, I've said a little bit this year, he's a guy that's really good in small doses. I don't know how he can be as an everyday first baseman. Obviously, we'll see. People kind of forget conveniently that he had some time to be an everyday first baseman down the stretch, and he didn't really perform that well. So we'll see what Jesus Aguilar can bring to the table. My guess is he will be the first baseman tonight for the Milwaukee. We'll definitely keep an eye on the Thames injury. Draft rumblings, there isn't much. I mean, we'll talk to Murph. I mean, obviously, if you guys have questions for Murph about which guys that you think may be drafted, it doesn't seem like Derwin James is going to be a possibility. Seems like he's going in the top 10. I'm not surprised by that. I think Derwin James is the type of player that I think is today's NFL. He's a hybrid. He's a guy that can help with the pass rush. He's a guy that can help against the run. He also can be in the secondary and play safety. I think those guys are at a premium these days, and I think there is going to be a team in the first 10 picks that are going to draft him. I think the same could be said for Denzel Ward. I think Denzel Ward is the type of guy who I think he has too much talent. Again, kind of like James, he's a speed corner. He's a guy who can play on day one. He's definitely a position of need for so many in that top 10. I think the Packers would have to trade up to get either Ward or James. The Marcus Davenport stuff scares me. I think Marcus Davenport is a project. I do not think he is worth the time or the effort for the Packers to draft him in the first round. I think it would be a reach. I know that someone told Domofsky that Harold Landry is the most overrated player in the NFL draft process. It is what a scout says. I don't know if that's true. I don't necessarily believe it. I think Harold Landry is a stud. I think he's a sack machine. And even if Harold Landry is, quote, overrated, if he can get to the quarterback, that's really all that fucking matters for the Packers. It doesn't matter if Harold Landry can be a guy who's out there every down. If Harold Landry is just the guy who's rushing the quarterback on third down, that's great. But fans hear this shit, especially from a trusted source like Domofsky, they're going to immediately assume that Landry is a bad pick if Brian Gutekunst does go that route. And yes, and if you're talking other NFL draft news, I feel like the Browns have every quarterback is in play. I think the Browns, I don't know if they're going to spin a wheel. I don't know what the Browns exactly are going to do here, but I would draft Josh Rosen. I think we're going to talk about Josh Rosen probably tonight, with tapping the keg for tomorrow. But Josh Rosen, I think, is mostly like Aaron Rodgers in just his attitude, his demeanor. I think the way he carries himself could be perceived as cocky, but a lot of people perceived Rodgers that way. I think Rosen's the type of guy that leads your team into the future. I'm not sure about Sam Darnold, USC quarterbacks just in general, and his turnovers and all this stuff. And I love Baker Mayfield, don't get me wrong, but Baker, I think, is going to take some time, and we're not really sure if he's going to make the pro style turn. And with Josh Allen has the quarterback body. The question is he going to be this, you know, stud guy with being as inaccurate as he was? Murph brought up a good point on Twitter yesterday. You can follow him at @TheNolanMurphy. That Matt Ryan and Matthew Stafford were under 60% completion percentage in college, and obviously they are doing just fine. So those are all on the table. I'm sure we'll get more draft smoke today, so we'll bring that to the table to talk to Murph about. Hopefully this evening, like I said at the beginning of the podcast, we may have a tapping the keg. It all depends on if Mitch can get a loaner car for himself and get himself out to the Snowtap Studios. So all right, guys. You know where to find us, SnowtapWI, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Subscribe on iTunes, subscribe on Google Play. We will talk to you tomorrow in some form or fashion. All right, take care, guys. Have a good one. Bye.